Back together, you and I, midweek Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today, the day after the 2021 municipal elections. We were joined by Tom Dudzik from ctcapitalreport.com online and, of course, from the Capitol Report. Sundays at 10:30 a.m. on WTNH News 8 to take a look at all the local races around Connecticut. And we followed with an analysis of the major national races from Quinnipiac University political science professor Scott McLean. Let's continue dissecting what happened or didn't happen or almost happened on Election Day across the state yesterday. This guy, you know, of course, Tom Dudzik. You see him every Sunday morning at 10 on the Capitol Report on WTNH News 8 and, of course, online, ctcapitalreport.com. Where everybody goes to get the latest news. Tom, Paul here. Sir, how are you?
Hey, you know, you basically make me want to, like, have a beer after talking about all that beer.
Well, you know, it's nature's cooler, Tom. You just put the six-pack outside.
You know, and the weather people call it tender vegetation. Bring your tender vegetation.
That's one that makes you think about it, right? Tom, what are your thoughts on last night? The Republican Party did pretty good, all right, not too bad around the state.
Yeah, I know. I mean, everyone's saying it was clearly a good night for the Republicans, both nationally and the state of Connecticut. You know, you look at some of those races, you know, from Killingly to Westport, most notably Bristol. I mean, Bristol's a town that has been Republican. It trended more towards Democratic, working class, blue collar. I think those are the towns that the Republican Party needs to win and to hold if they plan on making a stab in 2022.
And I mentioned the first hour here, Aaron Stewart, again, a female Republican in a blue city with a sizable minority population. Tom, she gets term number 5 in New Britain.
Yeah, the Harper Current did a great piece called 7 Takeaways from Tuesday's Election. That was number 3. And they said Aaron Stewart is, again, the face of the Republican Party. And that's true. I mean, she's done a great job in that town. She beat back a pretty formidable opponent, someone who was in the state legislature for 10 years, chairman of the Education Committee. But at the end of the day, it gets down to the pocketbook issues, Paul. People want to know about their jobs, their economic development in their town. And sure, issues that he talked about, meaning the education in the town. But it was mostly about the schools and maybe building new schools. And people understand we got tight in our belts right now, you know, so that really didn't resonate. And plus, the word on the street was that, you know, the Democrats like Aaron Stewart as the mayor. They don't want her to be defeated, you know, twiggling her thumbs, saying, well, maybe I'll go on a ticket with Bob Stefanowski or I'll run myself. So they kind of, I'm not going to say they sat on their hands, Paul, but they didn't really put their shoulder into that race.
Interesting. Never thought of that. Tom Dudzik, the guest, ctcapitalreport.com. And, of course, the Capitol Report, Sundays at 10 on News 8. 10:30,
Paul.
10:30. I'm sorry. 10:30.
Well, it was 10, but now Dennis, this week in Connecticut with Dennis House is now at 10 o'clock. I'm down at the bottom of the hour, so you get to, like, sleep a little later, so, Paul.
But you two don't brawl in the green room down there on Elm Street, do you? Everything's all right?
Well, we mixed it up in our different way, you know?
You threw some, back to my hockey play-by-play days, you threw a couple of haymakers, eh?
A couple of haymakers, yeah.
Stamford, what did you think? I didn't think it was surprising that Caroline Simmons won. Tom, what did you think about the gap, 5, 6, 4 points? It keeps varying as the votes are counted. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I went back and forth about who I thought was going to win that race. You know, it was one of these things where I thought Bobby Valentine would have that old line Stamford voters, and she would have kind of the new people who are moving to town from New York City. But in a low turnout race, it's really difficult to predict anything, Paul. You can't poll it. You just have to basically go on, you know, whatever happens, right? And I think Bobby just came short. I mean, I think that had he run against David Martin, he probably would have won. But running against Caroline Stewart Simmons, there was a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah, a couple of other races of interest, Tom. I was watching Hamden. Kurt Lang defeated in the primary. The winner there, decidedly to the left of the party, and Tom, you can probably remember as I do, at one time, you know, Hamden was a pretty right-leaning conservative town like a generation ago, but it's one of those areas where a lot of the New Haveners fled to, but not so anymore.
I know. I used to see you there at the station in Hamden all the time. Yeah. We talked Hamden politics. And Hamden, you're right. When the 17th senatorial district, there was a part of Hamden. If the Democrats won the Valley part of that, you'd be able to say, well, at least, you know, Hamden's going to help me help the Republicans, you know, and that is gone by the wayside. I talked to Brendan Sharkey, who was on my program, former Speaker of the House, a Democrat. He'd never be able to get elected in Hamden right now.
He's a Republican.
Brendan
Sharkey would be
a Republican. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, Tom, how much do you think having Donald Trump not on the cycle this time around, as he was in 16, 18, and 20, which obviously hurt the GOP statewide, did last night, do you think, Tom, prove at all that if the specter of Mr. Trump is not there, Republicans do better?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Liz Kranowitz, who is on my panel, always talks about the danger of these people who want to nationalize races. And the same, you know, the Republicans tried to wrap Dan Malloy around Ned Lamont, and they keep saying that he's going to be Malloy 2.0, Malloy, Malloy, Malloy. Well, it didn't work because it wasn't about Malloy. It was about Ned Lamont, and people voted for Ned Lamont. And the same thing here with Trump. And I have Bob Duff from Norwalk, senator, on my program, and he kept trying to say Trump this and Trump that and, Charlottesville. And that's all they've been doing, and it didn't work. And so I think that now people understand what people want to vote about. They want to vote about education, crime, and pocketbook issues. And that's what resonates with Connecticut voters. And it always has, Paul.
No.
It hasn't changed.
Absolutely. You're right. Tom, you probably, obviously, you saw it, and I read it almost verbatim on my show here, that push poll that public policy polling did a couple of weeks ago, you know, matching the hypothetical matchups, Ned Lamont versus Bob Stefanowski, Ned Lamont versus Themis Claridis, and they had pretty big margins there. But I did find something interesting in that survey, Tom, and you probably know where I'm going here. When it was just asked if Ned Lamont, are you going to vote for him, or is somebody else your preference? The gap kind of narrowed there. I think it was like 50 to 41 or 50 to 42. Anything you think we can read into that question?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at that, you're right in your analysis that there's a lot of people that are kind of wishy-washy on the governor. And, you know, we came through this pandemic, and everyone's patting him on the back. But now it's like, okay, let's move on, and now we're moving forward. You know, elections are about the future. They're not about the past. People don't look back and say, well, that was pretty good we got through that. Ned did a good job. Oh, let's vote him in. No, they want to look forward. So I think how that shapes up for 2022, Ned Lamont's probably looking at his friend Phil Murphy in New Jersey and saying, you know, there's a lot of suburbs that are a little more Republican now, and I got to worry about this big discussion 2 years ago about how Fairfield County was going to be all blue, and now was a big blue when years ago it was Republican, and I think hold the phone on that one.
Hey, Tom, final question here. As we head into an election year, and everybody obviously fully expects the governor to run again, but I think the dynamic is going to be interesting because the Republicans seem to be making enough noise, Tom, and I know the other side says, well, if you look at the numbers, but the Republicans say, hey, this juvenile justice thing, we've got to tighten up on this. You saw Commissioner Rovella say last week, yeah, there's about 100 or 200 teens out there who should be in some sort of supervised holding. Do you expect the crime thing to try and be or to be a wedge issue as we get toward a year from this November?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an issue. And I think now, based on the results this election, I wouldn't be surprised if the Democrats do go ahead and do a special session right now, tackle some of these issues now, prove to the electorate that we're going to do this, I mean, maybe before February, and kind of take that issue away from the Republicans to solve something right now.
All right. The great Tom Dudchick, folks. It's the TV version of the Capitol Report. Sundays at 10:30, News
and
8.
Paul,
yes.
And Paul, before I go, I'd be remiss in not mentioning Brad Davis.
Oh, yes.
You were very close to him, and you know, we were sad last night on set when the news broke. And for my condolences to his family and to you, because I know you were very close to him.
Yeah, I got to work about a year and change with him, Tom. You know, you're on with us a couple of times. And, Tom, I just tell people this who may not know Brad, they may be younger. I say, listen, if there ever is a Mount Rushmore of radio in Connecticut, two things I know. Number one, I won't be on it. Number two, he will be on it. So,
along with Bob Steele.
Yes, and the other two we can debate from now until then.
There you go, one and two.
Yeah, Capitol Report.
One and one A.
Yeah, there you go. I think they both like that because they were both friends and they loved each other. Capitol Report, Sundays, 10:30 a.m., WTNH.com, and News 8, and, of course, online, ctcapitalreport.com. Hey, Tom, good to chat. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Look forward to it.
All right,
thank you
very much. Bye-bye. Yep. Joining us right now, gentlemen, we've had on the show from time to time, Quinnipiac University poli sci professor Scott McLean, looking at some of the national implications from, I guess, two of the big races last night, a couple of governor's races in Jersey and in Virginia, some House races, too. Scott, it's Paul again here. How are you, sir? How you been?
Great, Paul. It's always great to be on your show.
Well, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. Well, Scott, let's talk about Virginia first. I was surprised when Terry McAuliffe was the candidate. I said, well, okay, he's a name. He can raise money. Longtime Democrat. They keep talking about how blue the eastern side of Virginia is now. Who's this Youngkin guy? Yeah, some private money guy, you know, some hedge fund guy or whatever, private equity. He's going to get killed. Scott, what happened? What did we see last night?
Oh, we saw a lot. It's when would we start, Paula? Youngkin is an outsider. He has the very much an avoidance of having Donald Trump come into the state. So even though he got Trump support, he didn't have a Trump visit that could have energized the Democrats against Youngkin. And he ran nearly a flawless campaign. On the other side, Terry McAuliffe made a horrendous gaffe when he talked about parents not being able to make decisions about schools and what's taught in schools. So I think it's very much a bad night for the Democrats. I'm not sure exactly what that means going forward for the next round of elections, or with what happens with Biden's bills in Congress right now.
You know, Scott, it's interesting. You just said something. You wonder that piqued my interest. You know, you wonder now if the Republicans are looking at this and peeling this apart. Is the formula going forward, maybe, Scott, to if they still want to embrace Mr. Trump, who has huge sway on the party still, is it, well, okay, Mr. President, we thank you for your endorsement, just don't come here. You know, like, release a video. Yeah, but just don't, we love you, but just don't show up. Might that be one of the takeaways, you think?
I think, but, you know, I don't think President Trump is controllable that way. I don't think he plays by the rules that the party leaders want him to play, and he never has. And I think that's part of his appeal to it. But I think, yes, you're right, Paulie. Having him not tweeting and having him off those platforms and not having him in the state prevented McAuliffe's main weapon to get voters out to the polls that against the Republican candidate.
Interesting. Scott, hang on. It's Quinnipiac University poli-sci professor Scott McLean is the guest. We'll be back with Scott momentarily. First, though, traffic and weather together, 4:36 on WICC. All right, Quinnipiac University professor, poli-sci professor, you know him, a lot of media appearances around the state, very learned guy in all this, Professor Scott McLean joining us for a few more minutes on this, and we're talking about what we saw nationally. Yeah, there were a couple of House races here and there, but everybody's talking about Virginia. We talked about that. And also, Scott, who's back with us, New Jersey. I mean, I saw this guy, Jack Cittarelli, Scott, and I'm like, okay, interesting guy. Guy's got some money. Murphy's going to cruise. And then, Scott, just the way Terry McAuliffe put his foot in his mouth, Jack Cittarelli jumped on a statement that kind of this throwaway little thing that Phil Murphy said at Rowan University during a candidates forum there. He said, well, and I'm kind of paraphrasing now, but you know where I'm going on this. If taxes are your number one issue, we're probably not the state for you. And Cittorelli picked up on that, Scott, and you couldn't go 5 minutes on New York radio without hearing that. Oh, my God. What did you make of that?
Yeah. Really silly move, and opened up an avenue of attack for Cittorelli. The Murphy campaign is hobbled in some ways, again, by the fact that it is an incumbent. And an outsider in this political era does have certain advantages over long-serving public officials. And so here's another example of it, the same as we saw in Virginia, where an outsider has an opportunity to go against someone who's better, more well-known, but well-known as a politician. And I think that the polls actually showed more separation between Murphy and Cittorelli than we saw in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's too close to call, and we're still counting the votes. And I don't know how it will go.
You know, Scott McLean, you talk about outsiders. We've talked about this before. You know, the outsiders, Scott, always seem to show up on the Republican side. You wonder, are we going to get in one of these cycles coming up likely for the White House? You know, are the Democrats going to have their outsider? Are they going to, and you know, you always hear about, you know, Mark Cuban, who I think would be a fascinating candidate, you know, The Rock, people, Matthew McConaughey. Why do you think they pop up, even on state races, they pop up more on the Republican side than on the Democratic side? Why do you think that's so?
Yeah, that's difficult to say. I'm not sure if that impression is reflected in actual facts. I just don't know. We haven't really done the analysis. But, you know, you can think about other Democratic outsiders, people like Barack Obama. He'd only been a state senator for a while, and then it was a U.S. senator for a couple of years, and then he was president. The Democrats sometimes do come up with outsiders, but you're right that I think the Republicans are not always the party of government. They're the party of more business, and that's where they can find leaders who are not inside the political system and yet also have that money. Gives them a little bit of an advantage when the times call for outsider candidates, like we're in now, I think.
Hmm. So, Scott, you're sitting in the room, maybe in a couple of days, maybe next week, and you're sitting in front of a table that's got all the DNC big wigs in front of you, the marketing person, the communications person, the fundraising person, and they look like they haven't slept in days. Oh, my God, Scott, Virginia, and even if Murphy hangs on New Jersey, would you tell them it's panic time for 2022 or tell them to take a breath and calm down?
I would tell them to calm down. First of all, McAuliffe and Murphy made their own mistakes. It doesn't necessarily reflect a crisis in the Democratic Party. The historical trend and the historical track record is that the party who owns the presidency has a tough time in the congressional elections 2 years later. That was bound to be a problem from the start. I think the bigger problem is that the Democrats have not put enough points on the board. They haven't passed these big, ambitious bills. They're just sitting there in Congress. And I think the wrong approach for the Democrats is to say, well, this just proves we should pull back and really not do anything or scale everything back.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice, such as it is, not that they would listen, is that they need to be bold. They need to make these big changes. Republicans won't like those changes, even if they are scaled back. So go for it. Get your base motivated to keep your people in office 2 more years in the congressional election.
So are Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema the real president and vice president now? Is that the real ticket that's running the country or not, Scott?
That is the question of the day. I think anyone who's senator always imagines themselves that they could be president. But here we have two senators who are really able to veto legislation. But let's not forget Mitch McConnell in all of this. He has made the decision that no matter what the Democrats put up on those two bills, they're not going to vote for them. And so that, in a way, that gives McConnell the ability to make Manchin a kind of a vetoing president in this case. But we'll see at the end of this week. I mean, we're being told that something will come forward this week. I haven't seen anything yet, but we'll see.
You know, Scott, finally. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Nancy Pelosi's office. Her head, Scott, must be exploding. I mean, the fact that you have this progressive wing, and I understand, and they're elected, and they have to do what their voters say. But the fact that they're holding up the infrastructure bill, I understand politics and everything, but, man, I'm sure there are just epithets being thrown left and right all over D.C. on this.
Yeah, I think it's really remarkable that the progressive caucus in the House has been willing to go along with a lot of the scaling back that went on because of Manchin and Sinema in the Senate. But their patience only goes so far. They will not vote for that bill unless they absolutely are certain Manchin and Sinema will not pull a switcheroo on them when it gets to the Senate. So that's sort of where we are, is eyeball to eyeball between the progressive caucus and the more conservative two senators who are not declaring their preference at the moment.
Quinnipiac University poli sci professor Scott McLean. Scott, good to talk with you again. Take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, Scott. Be good.
Love it. Take care, Paul.
Thanks. Be good. All right. He loves it. He loves being on the old radio show here. See that? All right.